ज्ञान चमिरंदया चक्षुसमृतान जैन तस्म श्री गुरुवै नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्ट स्थित जैन भूचल मंच कौपतिभ्यसन्नभ्यो Hearing about Maharaj Chitraketu, how he was given a benediction by Angira Muni. Muni, in many ways to say a holy man in the Sanskrit language, the generic way is a sadhu. And then sometimes they are called, the sages are called munis or rishis. So Angira Muni came and he saw that Chitraketu was very unhappy. And when asked, he asked him, what are you lacking? Or what is it that you have that you don't want? So he explained, the king Chitraketu explained that I have no son. It was his karma not to have a son, and it is very difficult to accept one's karma, one's lot in life. Very difficult. Because we have dreams of how we're going to be happy, if only if I had this, if only if I had that. And we spend our lives trying to fulfill these dreams, and really they're only dreams, because nothing dreamlike can truly bring us happiness. But in any case, Chitraketu Maharaj wanted a son. So by the potency, by the power of Angira Muni, he arranged a circumstance through a sacrifice that he could indeed have a son. And his wife thereafter became pregnant, and they had a child who would be the cause of Shoka and Harsha. Lamentation and happiness, both together. But that is actually the nature of everything that we have in the material world. There may be some happiness in it, but ultimately it brings us lamentation. Why? Because ultimately we have to be separated from it. Either that thing that we're attached to leaves us, or we leave that thing. Either we die, or it somehow becomes separated, or we're forced apart just by time. This is the nature of time. It forces, it crushes all relationships in the material world. Brings together and it forces apart. It is unstoppable. It is an energy of Krishna. Kalosmin loka chaya krit, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Time, I am. I have come to destroy everyone. So not that we gloat about it, how wonderful it is that time is destroying what everyone has that I don't have. No, but this is actually reality. This is material reality. And unless we understand the actual nature of material reality, we will not be able to enter into spiritual reality. And not only understand, but deeply realize. It must be deeply realized. That means that we have to be able to act on that level. We have to be able to act the philosophy that we read and speak of. It's realization. So the child grew up, and the co-wives of the queen became envious of all the attention that his mother Kritaduti, the foremost wife of Chitraketu, was receiving because she alone had a son, and they killed the child, they poisoned the child. This was everything to the king, and he lost his child when he was just a young boy. And the queen and the king were enwrapped in complete lamentation and wailing in misery. and the, practically speaking, the whole kingdom. The whole kingdom was miserable, crying, because how much the kingdom loves the son, the prince, the king to be. It's just natural. So at that time, when everyone was lamenting, wailing in their misery, then Angira came again before the king. He came in disguise along with another great saint named Narada Muni. So the last time we spoke, we read in the 15th chapter, we read the first basic instructions while there was still in disguise. Angira spoke again to Chitraketu, and he said, just imagine him saying this. Everyone is crying because the child has died. He's focused his whole life. The king has focused his whole life on this child, and the child is gone. He's died. And the sage stepped forward and said, "What relationship do you have with this child?" "Well, naturally, I'm the child's father, and he's my son. That's our relationship. But it doesn't exist now because he's gone. It didn't exist in the past before he was born, and it will not exist in the future when you've moved on to another body. So does it truly exist if it's here and then gone so quickly? Is it truly there?" That's like so many things. If someone put $1 million in your hand for a tenth of a second, it was yours, would you be the possessor truly of that $1 million? Not really. You could say, "Yes, I was a millionaire at one time." You tell your grandchildren. But really, it's all flickering. Therefore, the Vedic conception of reality is that which is eternal, that which we can't be separated from. So he's pointing this out to the king. And then how do these temporary situations come together? He gives an example, just like sticks and sand sometimes come together by the force of waves, and then later on by the force of the waves again they're broken apart. That is the action of time, he explains. And another example, sometimes when we throw seeds in the ground, if the seeds are potent and the ground is fertile, then the plants will grow. But sometimes it doesn't work. Why? Because ultimately, this coming together and going apart, which is temporary, is in the hands of a higher power than us, the Supreme Lord. Everyone is in a temporary situation. It is not false. It truly exists, but it's temporary. It's temporary. All our association, our circumstances are temporary. They don't, in that sense, truly exist. And it's out of our control when our circumstances are stable or when they fall apart, out of our control, ultimately in the hands of our fate, our karma, which is ultimately in the hands of the Lord. And yet, we try to grasp onto these things as reality. So naturally, we are bound to be disappointed and brokenhearted and wounded 1 billion times over in life. because we have an unrealistic expectation of the material world. Unrealistic means not true to reality. Because we want things in the material world to be suitable for our pleasure. We want it. And therefore, we expect it to happen. And therefore, we wish it to happen. We project that desire upon something that's not going to be there, not going to exist. And therefore, we are set up for such suffering and illusion in this world. And even more than that, we are disenfranchised from our relationship with Krishna by putting our hope in the temporary, flickering, changing, shifting sands of the material world that by the force of time they're always changing. We're putting our attention there, and therefore we have no ability to grasp that which doesn't change. So this is what's the first things that are explained. And then in the last verse in this section that we read was, those who are advanced in knowledge don't recognize the divisions of generalization and specification. In other words, when we generalize ourselves, I'm a human being, we don't realize. We're not accepting this temporariness of our situation. Actually, we're not human beings. We're not human beings any more than animals and bugs and birds are animals, bugs and birds, because we're souls, we're eternal. And that soul has an eternal nature, an eternal identity. Jivera Surubhoi Krishna Nityadas. So when we ask who I am, who actually am I, it's very hard for the conditioned soul, the soul in the web of illusion, to actually understand who he is because of this identification with the false. We can understand more easily who we're not. We're not the body. That's not even easy to understand, but we can understand it easier than who we are. We can understand something about who we are. We're eternal. If we understand we're not the body, and Krishna gives a nice example in the Bhagavad Gita to explain that. Tehenos vinyatadehi komanam jovanam jara tatadehantara praptir dirastatramuyate, that the sober person sees that there's a continuity of identity. What is the opposite of sober? Intoxicated. An intoxicated person who is trying to enjoy, wishing, trying so hard to enjoy that which can't be enjoyed. He can't see this, but the sober person can understand that there is a continuity of identity through all the changes of bodies. Through boyhood, to youth, to middle age, to old age. It's the same person. And then, since that doesn't change, the identity and the soul doesn't change, and the consciousness is a symptom of the soul, then at the time of death there's no change either of the consciousness. He just re-identifies, he stops his identification with one body, and then when he's born again, his identification with another body is awakened. The body that he's inhabiting. Just like a changing cars. You know, I'm getting rid of this unfortunate 1978 Holden, and when I'm driving that along, I'm quite embarrassed. Everyone looks at me, and now I have a fast new BMW 2001, the car of the millennium. Wow. I'm very proud when I drive that one along, and it's true, we become intoxicated by the vehicles that we're in, or embarrassed by them. And this is it. This is the vehicle. It's all temporary. Relationship with the car is temporary. Relationship with the body is temporary. So those who are not advanced in knowledge see in relationship to the body, either in generalizations, I'm a member of this class, this group, or specifics, I'm an individual, and those individual characteristics are also false if they're in relationship to the changing body. So this staggered Chitraketu when he heard this in the midst of his crying, and the sage came by and told him, this is foolish, this is illusion. You're lamenting asochanan vasochastvam pragyavanam chabasase. You're lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. You're not acting like a wise person. Krishna told Arjuna the same thing. So how did Chitraketu respond? He became enlightened, actually. He was so fertile and eager for this transcendental knowledge. As soon as he heard it, it went into his heart. And he realized it. Thus enlightened by the instructions of Narada and Angira, King Chitraketu became hopeful with knowledge. Wiping his shriveled face with his hand, the king began to speak. So in the next 7 verses, 10 to 16, he's going to request this unknown sage who he doesn't recognize as Angira Muni, the one who, same one who benedicted him previously to have a child, and the same one who told him the child was going to cause happiness and lamentation. He doesn't recognize him yet. But he says to him, Angira and Narada, you have both come here dressed like avadutas, liberated persons, just to cover your identities. But I see that of all men, you are the most elevated in awareness. You're aware of truth. You know everything as it is. You're not influenced by illusion. You're not intoxicated by the illusory energy. Therefore, because you see things as they are, you are the greatest of all great personalities. Brahmanas, who are exalted to the position of Vaishnavas, the most dear servants of Krishna, sometimes dress as madmen. So they were dressed as derelicts or just as poor people. But actually they had a great wealth of knowledge. So sometimes these Bhagavat Priya, or Brahmanas, Bhagavat Priya means those who adhere to the Lord, they dress as if they possess nothing in this material world, just to benefit materialists like us, who are always attached to sense gratification, and just to dissipate our ignorance. These Vaishnavas wander on the surface of the globe according to their desire. So they go here and there as they like. They have no other engagement other than to spread knowledge. O great souls, I've heard that among the great and perfect persons wandering the surface of the earth to instruct knowledge to people covered by ignorance are Sanat Kumar, Narada, Ribhu, Angira, Devala, Asita. These are all names of great sages. Apantaratma, Vyastev, Markandeya, Gautama, Vashishta, Bhagavan Parsaram, Kapila, Sukadev, Duravas, Jagyavalkya, Jatukarna, and Aruni. Others are Romasha, Chayavan, Dattateya, Asuri, Pantanjali, the great sage Domya, who is like the head of the Vedas, the sage Panchashika, Haranyanabha, Kaushalya, Shrutadeva, and Ritadwaj. You must be certainly amongst them. You must be a great sage. I don't know which ones you are, but you're obviously great sages who are wandering just for the purpose of awarding transcendental knowledge to people covered by ignorance like I am. And therefore, I'm suffering so much due to this ignorance. Because why am I suffering? I'm attached to things that must be pulled from me, must be separated from me, very violently at times. Not peaceful separation. Because things that I'm attached to. I want them. But it doesn't work like that. So therefore, everyone in the material world who has material attachments in illusion is bound to suffer, because time and the very nature of the material world is to bring things together and push them, force them. So he's saying that you are, must be great sages who have come to give knowledge that frees one from the suffering caused by ignorance. Because you are great personalities, you can give me real knowledge. I am as foolish as a village animal, like a pig or a dog, because I emerge in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, please ignite the torch of knowledge to save me. Here's Prabhupada's purport. This is the way to receive knowledge. One must submit oneself at the lotus feet of great personalities who can actually deliver transcendental knowledge. It is therefore said, Tasmad gurun prapadyeta gigyaso shreya uttamam. One who is inquisitive to understand the highest goal and benefit of life must approach a bona fide spiritual master and surrender unto him. Only one who is actually eager to receive knowledge to eradicate the darkness of ignorance is eligible to approach a guru or spiritual master. The guru should not be approached for material benefit. One should not approach a guru just to cure some disease or receive some miraculous benefit. This is not the way to approach the guru. Tad vijnanartham, one should approach the guru to understand the transcendental science of spiritual life. Unfortunately, in this age of Kali, there are many bogus gurus who display magic to their disciples, and many foolish disciples want to see such magic for material benefit. These disciples are not interested in pursuing spiritual life to save themselves from the darkness of ignorance. It is said, Om Agyanati Mirhandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksusa Militan Jena Tasmai Sri Giravena Maha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. This gives the definition of the guru. Everyone is in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, everyone needs to be enlightened with transcendental knowledge. Even that word enlightened has the word light in it, which is the opposite of darkness. And darkness is always compared to ignorance. And actually, when we detach ourselves from matter and free ourselves from the lower modes, forces of material nature, our whole consciousness becomes enlightened, and also light, buoyant. It's ignorance and passion that pull us down, that darken our consciousness. And these qualities sit in our mind. And when the mind becomes attached to Krishna, and when it ceases to become attached to matter, then it becomes crystal clear, enlightened. This is when the mind is in the mode of goodness. And when the mind is clear and pure in that way, and then when it takes shelter of Krishna, the spiritual energy, very, very quickly, very, 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 very quickly, it becomes love for Krishna becomes manifest within that soul with that kind of consciousness. So that is what enlightenment means. The removal of darkness and the adding of spiritual light, of transcendental spiritual light, which is our relationship with Krishna. And there's an incredible description when Dhruva Maharaj became enlightened in the fourth canto. Such a wonderful description, how all his senses became fully enlivened, enlightened. It's so wonderful, actually. And that's what we're longing for. We're tired of being darkened. even though we may not fully realize it, but the darkness causes our problem, the ignorance and the passion causes all the problems, all the miseries of life. They're like whips that beat us continuously. So when these whips cease to flail us and the mode of goodness becomes prominent in our consciousness, then actually we become enlightened and happy. And then when that consciousness, pure and clean, is offered to Krishna with great devotion by a soul in love with Krishna, then you can go to the spiritual world. So Chitraketu, recognizing these sages, although he doesn't know who they are, as having the capacity to enlighten him, because their consciousness is powerful, it's pure. And when pure, powerful consciousness comes in contact with the darkened room of my consciousness, then my consciousness also lights up by that association. So they're begging. He's begging for that. So therefore he says, please ignite the torch of knowledge to save me. And here's how Angira replied. My dear king, when you desired to have a son, I approached you. Indeed, he revealed himself, who he actually is. I am the same Angira Rishi who gave you this son. As for this Rishi, he is the great sage Narada, the direct son of Lord Brahma. My dear king, you're an advanced devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To be absorbed in lamentation for the loss of something material is unsuitable for a person like you. Therefore, we have both come to relieve you from this false lamentation, which is due to your being merged in the darkness of ignorance. For those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge, to be affected by material loss and gain is not at all desirable. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. A devotee should always aspire to engage in the service of advanced devotees. As Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Tandera charana sevi bhakta sane vas Janame janame hai he abhilas. A devotee should always aspire to live in the association of advanced devotees and engage in the service of the Lord through the parampara system. One should serve the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the instructions of the great Goswamis of Vrindavan. This is called Tandera Charana Sevi. While serving the lotus feet of the Goswamis, one should live in the association of devotees, Bhakta Sanivas. This is the business of a devotee. A devotee should not aspire for material profit or lament for material loss. When Angira Rishi and Narada saw that Maharaj Chitraketu, an advanced devotee, had fallen in the darkness of ignorance and was lamenting for the material body of his son, by their causeless mercy they came to advise him so that he could be saved from this ignorance. Next verse, Angira continued. When I first came to your home, I could have given you the supreme transcendental knowledge. But when I saw that your mind was absorbed in material things, I gave you only a son who caused you jubilation and lamentation. Very interesting. When the pot is full, then nothing else can be added into it. So when the desires are materialistic, no matter who tells us, there's one verse that Prahlad Maharaj tells Aranyakasipu, Matir na krishne paratakshvatova mityo vipadyeta grihavratanam mandanti govir vishatata mizram purnas purna chavita chavananam. That means, matirna krishte, means the mind inclination to Krishna will never occur. If people preach to you, it won't occur. If people decide that you should have it, it won't occur. Or if you decide yourself, it won't occur. As long as one has deep desires for material enjoyment. So as long as one has those deep desires, we can't actually advance very much. Therefore, it's important that we become convinced that the material world offers truly no hope for our happiness. And unless we become deeply convinced of that, we actually can't make much advancement. So therefore, as a prelude to talking directly about Krishna, the spiritual, supreme personality of Godhead, so much background work has to be done here to convince us and help us realize that we can try to enjoy the material world from here till billions and billions and billions of years, and indeed we have been trying to do that. We can imagine only if I had this circumstance or that circumstance, that much money, that much partner, that much, that many cars, that many, oh, we all have our plans and our own secret lists, that only if, then I'd be happy. And the other side of it is the only if. One side is the ichha, the desires, and the other is the dvesha, that which I don't want. Only if this was pushed away, and only if that took its place. Only if my body was really strong and healthy, and my disease was away, then I'd be happy. So we go on imagining like this. And in this way, through having desires in this way, we set ourselves up for birth after birth after birth after birth by desiring. Because desiring, every desire is a prayer, it has been said. And desires also make us act. They impel us to act. And actions bring reactions and entangle us in the material world. So therefore, what Prabhupada said in the last purport is so important. Tandira charana sevi bhakta sanevas janame janame hoy e abhilas. Abhilas means desire. Janame janame hoy means birth after birth, this is my desire. And what is that? Tandira charana sevi bhakta sanevas. To serve advanced devotees and live in their association. Why? Because if we do that, then spiritual desires will come to our heart. Because the light of their association, their enlightened consciousness, will shine into our darkened hearts. And will naturally want what they have, which is very good. But we have to pay the price that they have paid. That's the hard part. To want spiritual advancement, to want to love Krishna, to want to be in Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna forever is wonderful. And gradually as our desire increases in that way by association and by following the process, by chanting and hearing, serving under the guidance of qualified spiritual masters, then gradually that desire increases, 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 and that cleanses, and the increasing of the light also removes the darkness. Krishna Surya Sammaya Haya Andhakar. So, out of their causeless kindness and mercy, these two sages came to Chituketu to free him. I gave you only a son, Angira said, who caused you jubilation and lamentation. My dear king, Now you're actually experiencing the misery of a person who has sons and daughters. O king, owner of the state of Sarasena, one's wife, his house, the opulence of his kingdom, and his various other opulences and objects of sense perception are all the same in that they are temporary. One's kingdom, military power, treasury, servants, ministers, friends, and relatives are all causes of fear, illusion, lamentation, and distress. They are like a Gandharva Nagara, a non-existent palace that one imagines to exist in the forest. Because they are impermanent, they are no better than illusions, dreams, and mental concoctions. We'll read Prabhupada's purport here. This verse describes the entanglement of material existence. In material existence, the living entity possesses so many things. The material body, children, wife, and so on. Patra kalatra deshu. One may think that all these will give him protection, but that is impossible. In spite of all these possessions, the spirit soul has to give up his present situation and accept another. The next situation may be unfavorable, but even if it is favorable, one must give it up and again accept another body. So we may be in an unfavorable position and wish to have a better position. And it is a fact, we will lose that situation, we will die. Or, on the other hand, if we have a favorable body and situation, even if we want to hold on to it, if we can't, we will be kicked out, forcibly kicked out by the power of time. The unstoppable power of time. In this way, one's tribulation in material existence continues. A sane man should be perfectly aware that these things will never be able to give him happiness. One must be situated in his spiritual identity and eternally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a devotee. Angira Rishi and Narada Muni gave this instruction to Maharaj Chitraketu. So he's continuing to instruct about the falsity of material enjoyment. These visible objects like wife, children, and property are like dreams and mental concoctions. The Sanskrit word that Prabhupada translates as mental concoction is, he says that from the mind, manubhava, or sometimes manuratta, the chariot of the mind, because the mind makes something appear pleasurable, and then the next instant the mind can make the very same thing the greatest cause of distress. Or it could be neutral about something. Just like if you hear that a car was stolen and you have a very fancy new car, you don't care. But then when you find out it was your car, then you're in complete anxiety and it's so painful. So the same car was stolen, but until the mind has an identification with it, there's no pain. So it's the mind that actually causes the pain and the pleasure. It's the mind. It's not inherently me. It's not the object that is the source of the pleasure. It's the mind. It depends on one's concocted conception within the mind whether something causes happiness or distress or neutrality. We could care less. If someone who we don't know gets hurt and it could be crying in the greatest pain, we may experience a little sympathy or something, but it really doesn't touch us deeply. But if someone we know and love gets hurt, then we feel the pain. What to speak is if we get hurt physically, we feel so much pain. Because the mind, we have a mental attachment to a friend. And therefore we experience the friend's happinesses and the friend's miseries as if they were our own. But it's only in the mind. We have nothing to do with his happiness or misery otherwise. So therefore, he explains all this. There are so many children in the world. Some of them are children soldiers. Some of them are dying of malnutrition. Some of them this, some of them that. But when they're my children, it's completely different. When it's my wife, my husband, my mother, my father, my country, then it's different. So these visible objects like wife, children, and property, like dreams and mental concoctions, actually what we see has no permanent existence. It is sometimes seen and sometimes not. Only because of our past actions do we create such mental concoctions. And because of these concoctions, we perform further activities. Because of our mental conceptions, we perform our activities. So much exists in the mind. The mind is so important. And if the mind somehow becomes attached to Krishna, attracted to Krishna's names, then everything is very, very simple in our spiritual life. But if it becomes attached to an object of illusion, then our spiritual life becomes very difficult. Therefore, the early years that we grow up are so important. Our childhood years are so important because so many of our attachments or aversions are set into our mind at that time. Very hard to rid ourselves of these things. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended chanting, constantly chanting Krishna's names to cleanse, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, to completely cleanse the mirror of the mind, of the heart. Here's Prabhupada's purport to this. Everything material is a mental concoction because it is sometimes visible and sometimes not. At night, when we dream of tigers and snakes, they are not actually present. But we are afraid because we are affected by what we envision in our dreams. Everything material is like a dream because it actually has no permanent existence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes as follows in his commentary, and there's a Sanskrit quotation, and here's the translation. At night one dreams of tigers and snakes, and while dreaming he actually sees them. But as soon as the dream is broken, they no longer exist. Did you ever think you lost your wallet ever, and you had a lot of money in your wallet or something, and you think you lost it, and you're in so much anxiety, and it's like a torture, and then you find it somewhere else. You find it, oh, it's under my pillow or something, or it fell out of my pocket, and it's over there. Then immediately, oh, such a relief. So where did that misery and where did that relief come from? Just the mind. There was a reality, but depending upon how we perceive things, it causes us happiness or misery. So similarly, the material world is a creation of our material concoctions, our mental concoctions, excuse me. We have come to this material world to enjoy material resources. And by material mental concoction, we discover many, many objects of enjoyment because our minds are absorbed in material things. This is why we receive various bodies. So whatever attachments we have situated in the mind that will cause us to take a suitable material body to enjoy that thing that we're attached to. And what one person is attached to, another person may hate. So So according to our mental concoctions, we work in various ways. There are some people, when the surf's up, they drop everything and get their boards and they go out to the ocean. They don't care about anything, practically speaking. So what one perceives or conceives of as happiness forces one to work in a particular way. Or other people, what do they want? What they want, you know, the house, the perfect house with the swimming pool and the thick carpets or whatever, and they'll work so hard for that, for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years of their life, they'll spend working just for that. Because they have that conception. The person may not have that conception at all. Who thinks that traveling throughout the world continuously will make me, and who works so hard 10 months out of the year to get the 2 month vacation or something so he can do that. But the happinesses exist in the mind in that way, and they force one to work, and they dictate the next body that we'll have. One time in Hawaii, Prabhupada was explaining the dangers of surfing. Even though surfing is... One time he said, this is ecstasy, but for how long? But then he said, it's so dangerous. Why? Because if we're developing those kind of desires to ride and play and enjoy the push of the waves of the water, we don't know that in our next life we may not have to come out of the water at all, or eat outside of the water, or even come to the surface at all. If we're developing that kind of desire, so according to our mental concoction, we work in various ways, desiring various achievements, and by nature and the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kamana, Daiva, Naishraina, we get the advantages we desire. So when we plant those desires in the heart, they will come to fruition at some time or another. We will, maybe a long time in the future, or maybe very short, depending upon our karma and Krishna's desire, but we will get those things that we desire. So that's very wonderful if we learn how to desire properly. I once had one devotee that, someone who joined in Japan back in 1970. He had figured this out, this principle out. And he started praying to God whenever he wanted something. So he prayed to God for a job. He was an American devotee in Japan, and he very quickly got a job. Then he prayed to God for a girlfriend, and almost within weeks a girlfriend appeared like that. He thought, this is a great principle. I like this very much. But he must have prayed for something deeper than that too, because then he started chanting. Krishna saw that, oh, you have some faith. There's something much more wonderful than these flickering temporary things. It's like Prabhupada told the story that he had heard from his spiritual master, that in India there's a system, and you see this even in Vrindavan nowadays, that the old ladies, they carry huge bundles of wood on their head for firewood. Huge. And they can't pick them up and put them on their heads themselves. They're too big. Has anyone ever seen this? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So somehow or another, if they fall down and they're alone, they're in trouble, because they can't pick it up. It's too big. So one lady, old lady, her bundle, she was alone in the forest. And she had worked the whole day gathering this wood and had to come back, and it fell off her head. So she began to pray, Oh God, please help me. Please help me. I need you so deeply.
So then God came. I think she was praying. I don't remember if it was Krishna or what. And she said, yes. What do you want? Please help me put this bundle back on my head so I can get home. So it's so silly. Why? Because God has so much power. He could give you 100 bundles, or he can make you have so many billions of dollars you never have to carry firewood again. Or you could go to the spiritual world. He's asking you what you want. And what do you ask for? To put the bundle on your head. So that is what it's like asking, desiring material things. But how many times a day is my mind and heart filled with these kind of material desires? Petty, ridiculous prayers. So many times, so unfortunate. But if somehow or another, by Tandera Charanasevi Bhakta Sanivas, somehow or another, if by fortune, good association, by reading Bhagavatam, by chanting Krishna's names, by hearing kirtan, if somehow the desire to be with Krishna and serve him in Goloka Vrindavan can burst into flames within my heart and consume and burn to ashes all those petty, small, ridiculous bundle of wood desires, how fortunate I'll be then. So Prabhupada continues saying, according to our mental concoctions, we work in various ways, desiring various achievements, and by nature and the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we get the advantages we desire. And what is the result? Thus we become more and more involved with material concoctions. This is the reason for our suffering in the material world. By one kind of activity, we create another. And they're all products of our mental concoctions. There's just a few more verses. Angira continues, the living entity in the bodily conception of life is absorbed in the body, which is a combination of the physical elements, the five senses for gathering knowledge, the five senses of action, along with the mind. Through the mind, the living entity suffers three kinds of tribulations, adibhautika, adidaivika, and adiatmika. Therefore, this body is a source of all miseries. So he's trying to impress this point so strongly on Chitraketu Maharaj that the very nature of the soul within a material body, encased within the material body, means suffering. Adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautic, suffering that we cause ourselves, suffering that are caused by the natural elements, and sufferings that others cause us. And there's no way around this. In the fifth canto, Prabhupada's purport, this is the last fairly long purport. In the fifth canto, while instructing his son, Rishabhdev said, Asanapi Kleshira Asadeha. The body, although temporary, is the cause of all the miseries of material existence. As already discussed in the previous verse, the entire material creation is based on mental concoction. The mind sometimes induces us to think that if we purchase an automobile, we can enjoy the physical elements, such as earth, water, air, and fire, combined in the forms of iron, plastic, petrol, and so on. Working with the five material elements, as well as with our five knowledge-gathering senses, like the eyes, ears, and tongue, and our five active senses, like the hands and legs, we become involved in the material condition. Thus we are subjected to the tribulations known as adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. The mind is the center, because the mind creates all these things. As soon as the material object is struck, however, the mind is affected and we suffer. For example, with the material elements, the working senses and the knowledge gathering senses, we create a very nice car, and when the car is accidentally smashed in a collision, the mind suffers, and through the mind, the living entity suffers. We identify with the mind, and the mind is trying to enjoy matter through the body. The fact is that the living entity, while concocting with the mind, creates the material condition. Because matter is destructible, through the material condition, the living entity suffers. Otherwise, the living entity is detached from all material conditions. When one comes to the Brahman platform, the platform of spiritual life, fully understanding that he is a spiritual soul, he is no longer affected by lamentation or hankering. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 1854, Brahmabhuta prasanatmana sochatina kankshati. So one who understands that he's a soul, that he's eternal, he's not the body, he's not the mind, he's enlightened, his consciousness is enlightened, there is no lamentation or just material desiring for such a person. He never laments nor desires to have anything. Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita 15:7, the Lord says, Mamaivangso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana manashashtanindriyani prakriti stanikashati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. The living entity is actually part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is unaffected by material conditions. But because the mind, mana, is affected, the senses are affected, and the living entity struggles for existence within the material world. Therefore, O King Chitraketu, carefully consider the position of the Atma, the soul. In other words, try to understand who you are, whether you are your body, mind, or soul. Consider where you have come from, where you are going after giving up this body, and why you are under the control of material lamentation. Try to understand your real position in this way, and then you will be able to give up your unnecessary attachment. You will also be able to give up the belief that this material world or anything not directly in touch with service to Krishna is eternal. Thus, you will attain peace. Prabhupada's purport. The Krishna consciousness movement is factually endeavoring to bring human society to a sober condition. Because of a misdirected civilization, people are jumping a materialistic life like cats and dogs, performing all sorts of abominable sinful actions and becoming increasingly entangled. The Krishna consciousness movement includes self-realization, because one is first directed by Lord Krishna to understand that one is not the body, but the owner of the body. When one understands this simple fact, he can direct himself towards the goal of life. Because people are not educated in terms of the goal of life, they are working like madmen and becoming more and more attached to the material atmosphere. The misguided man accepts the material condition as everlasting. One must give up his faith in material things and give up attachment for them. Then one will be sober and peaceful. That's all that Angira Muni has to say. And now Narada Muni, the great sage, continues. My dear king, attentively receive from me a mantra which is most auspicious. After accepting it from me, in 7 nights, you'll be able to see the Lord face to face. My dear king, in former days, Lord Shiva and other demigods took shelter of the lotus feet of Shankarshan, the name of the Lord. Thus, they immediately got free from the illusion of duality and achieved unequal and unsurpassed glories in spiritual life. So one side getting free from illusion, from darkness, and on the other side, attaining something wonderful, becoming enlightened, spiritual life. They achieved unequaled and unsurpassed glory in spiritual life. You will very soon attain that very same position. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 15th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Saints Narada and Angira Instruct King Chitraketu. Thank you very much. tomorrow, if Krishna allows, Narada Muni will use some of his power to do something very wonderful. He will do something miraculous to convince Chitraketu Maharaj still further about the true life of the eternal soul. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam.